Is it time to reimagine your future? The right business skills may make a difference in your career. At Capella University, we offer a relevant education that's designed to focus on what you need to know in the business world. We'll teach professional skills to help you pursue your goals, like business management, strategic planning, and effective communication. And you can apply these skills right away. A different future is closer than you think with Capella University. Learn more at capella.edu.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/campaign to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/campaign. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
In this episode, Francis Trudeau, CFO at Brainbox AI, talks about estimating company value in today's hyped up market, outlines how Brainbox are fighting climate change through intelligent heating systems, and emphasizes why automation was a key mandate when starting his latest CFO role. Hi, I'm Ross, and this is the CFO Playbook, where each week you'll get insights from world-class financial leaders to help you grow your company, yourself, and face the challenges required of today's CFO. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, Ross. I appreciate it.
So, Francis, I noticed when I was obviously looking into your background and that we shared many, many moons ago an experience with Arthur Andersen. So I worked for many moons ago Accenture, which was the consulting, which was, of course, the rebranded version of the consulting side of Arthur Andersen. And earlier on, you'd worked for the audit side of Arthur Andersen, which at the time was one of the big five. And I actually, like nowadays, most people only know the big four because it's been subsumed since then. But whilst it seems many moons ago compared to your experiences now working in tech as a CFO, I wanted to start by just asking what it was like at that pivotal period in Arthur Andersen when you were joining first stage in your career, and they eventually towards the end of that went through this tumultuous time with the Enron scandal.
Yeah, I mean, to date, after like a career of 22 something years, Arthur Andersen is still my favorite employer. So I'm still branded Arthur Andersen with considering everything that happened since. I really love the culture there. I love the training. I love the people, like still personal friends today from Arthur Andersen. But it was a tough ride. Like, for example, I've worked there for almost 3 years. But after the last year, I transferred in the corporate finance department. So going from audit to corporate finance, and from a team of, that's around 30 people, we were six at the end. In Canada, Arthur Andersen got like onboarded to Deloitte. So the Canadian branch got acquired by Deloitte. And it was a tough ride. It was the beginning of the early years of internet, and the billing of Arthur Andersen was public and going down every day and losing clients. I was proud about like Arthur Andersen, and to see all that, like and see like it was 88,000 people around the world, which I don't know if you were still there at that time, but to see like all those people that were not involved being impacted by like a team in the US, like from Houston, it was difficult. But still today, as I said, like I retain all kinds of good souvenir about Arthur Andersen.
And I can imagine that because it's such a formative period in your career. And so then you mentioned that within that experience, you'd already decided to move from audit into corporate finance, which in a way was the big step that led to you going down the path that has led to you where you are now as CFO. So what prompted that move?
Already, like after completing my BCom, I didn't know if I was going to do investment banking or accounting or finance type of corporate finance type of role. And I met people from Arthur Andersen and like in career centers and stuff like that. And I was impressed by their drive. And you just said it was like growth oriented, like very outgoing type of approach. And I said, like, why not? So I basically joined to do my CPA, CPA-CA in Canada, and basically started as a summer student and gave me the chance to like it and basically join after my BCom and did my CA program. Yeah, and finance has always been in my mind the career that I was looking. I like the business sense and I liked it. So early on, I was very lucky. Transfer were rare. They were marketing it a lot, but it was difficult to get through that. But I was lucky enough, I was able to make it. So after my hours were completed, I switched to the corporate finance department, and Montreal was an early stage office of Arthur Anderson. So we were doing a bit of everything from business model to sell side, buy side, business valuation. So it was good to see as an advisor and to be able to touch a bit of everything, help different partners at that time.
And then that experience of moving to corporate finance, that pretty much set the scene for another close to a decade and a half or so in and around corporate development and M&A. So presumably that was your spot. You must have loved it to have committed for such a long time.
I set the stage in my career, and my Arthur Anderson mentor at the time, still my mentor today, and I cannot thank him enough, because really, even today in my CFO position, everything that I've learned through corporate finance, M&A, business valuation serves me a lot. I'm a chartered accountant, and it's basic of my training and of my knowledge, but this business partnering approach, understanding different areas of the business, the value proposition, I think I really got early in my career, got into it. And that set the stage, because I decided after to complete an MBA, I decided to do a chartered business valuator title, which served me a lot. So I encourage people that are working in accounting firms that are curious about other departments to try to do it.
So then, as someone who is an expert I'll call you an expert in business valuations, or certainly someone who is classically trained, I would love to know your views on the valuations that are in the market right now, both public and private, especially in technology, because they've broken away from all conventional fundamental value. So how does someone, again, like you as a CFO in a tech company, bridge the gap between their training and understanding business value and the current valuations we see in the market today?
It's crazy. Early in my career, it was the dot-com. And, at that point, the rule of thumbs at that time, it was a famous 5 to 7 times EBITDA type of approach at that time. And dot-com exploded all that. And then there was a crisis 2008 and even 2002 and then 2008. And you say, okay, it's going to come back to normal. But today it's just above everything. So it's difficult, because as an investor, your ROI is not or your payback period is not very long. It's not over the traditional time frame. So when you acquire a company, 15, 20 times cash flow, it puts a lot of pressure on synergies or growth. And growth in tech company has been tremendous lately, especially the pandemic has accelerated all that. I could understand the valuation of those tech company, even if they're not profitable. There's precedent and it justifies, but there's all kinds of other industry where I don't see how someone will make an ROI, and that puts pressure on quick decision on synergies, and sometimes very often is short-term synergies to please investors, which that's where I don't think we're creating value as a whole, as a system. But it's definitely on earth, but there's so much capital right now that it's a willing buyer and a willing seller. So you have to accept that the market is right, even if it's, again, the rule of thumbs you've learned younger in your career.
I like the fact that we begin with classical models, fundamentals, and then when that breaks down, like Bitcoin, it just becomes supply and demand.
Exactly. The accountants, after we try to transition supply and demand into model and justify it, but at the end of the day, there's people that transforms things the right way, and with their capital, are being able to generate synergies, and good if they're able to make it. And that's why the valuations have been driven up right now.
And I wonder what role that you've seen players like Tiger Global play, because their approach for those that have come across them is fascinating. And I only recently came across them this year, and the way that they're come in, and you see a lot of memes on social media, whether it's Twitter or LinkedIn, about how Tiger Global are, you know, chasing founders with insane valuations. And in a way, they almost don't care about the valuation, because they just want to have participation in certain macro trends, and they're outbidding a lot of the classical Bay Area funds. So these crossover funds are completely disrupting the game, and it's a fascinating dynamic.
It's fascinating. But, you know, there's a scarcity of talent, but also good companies. So by them betting on macro views, I think it's proven that it's the right thing to do. The only thing is how many people betted on, like, the internet, like, at the turn of the 2000s, and you've seen Google and some of those companies like come up to the NN, but there's a tons of those, I would say, companies that were in that field that just disappeared. So by them, like, it becomes a portfolio effect. At one point, they bet on a sector, they bet on macro views, and they'll have success at one point. I think it's the same thing right now with electric car or with Bitcoins, in a sense. Like, you know, at one point it's going to get there. So I think their approach is totally disruptive. It's creating pressure on the other, more conventional. Like, imagine banks right now in those sectors, like, that needs to compete with players like that, with all kinds of risk management. And so it becomes difficult for them to compete.
We're speaking about it more as an observer or of the market, but then you're very much participating as CFO at Brainbox AI. And so again, if you're thinking from the point of view of a CFO, how do you think other CFOs should perceive these types of investors like Tiger, or the disruption that's occurring? Because ultimately, there's a very delicate balance for CFOs where you want to raise funds, but at the right valuation that's not too high, too low, in a sustainable way, almost impossible to get right. So how should other CFOs think about that?
That's a very good question, because we just closed a Series A round and we just went through that type of decision. You mentioned, like, right partner, right valuation. That's like a fine balance, because also you, like our case, like startup, you know you're going to get a next round and you still need to, like, interest investors. So on the right company or right partner, it's going to sound cliche, but values are important. So if you're there for the long run or the longer run, and if you believe that you're not ready for a quick exit, you need to choose that those types of player. There's a lot out there that are more value driven, maybe longer period, older. So I would say, like, for CFO, let's make sure you look at what their investment cycles and make sure you understand their track record. Sometimes you look for short-term, aggressive, like high synergies type of player that creates value, and sometimes you need a different partner. In terms of the valuation, it's also a tough question, because you also want to show progress and you want to benefit from this hype. And in our case, we're right in the middle of AI and GHG, carbon reduction, climate change. And there's a lot, like, of, it's very important. And there's a lot of traction around those company. And so you still want to position yourself as something that could attract high valuation, because the next one you want to show that you're better, and so your basis is very key and important. So it puts pressure on management, but you want to still benefit from that. So that's a fine balance, as you said. It's not easy, but at the end, the market wins. So you have discussion, and you lose some investors because they don't believe in your valuation. You gain some, and at one point you reach a point where you feel you're in a zone, and that everyone is comfortable.
And on that point, that you're obviously at Series A, so you're establishing product market fit and showing that you can grow globally and so forth. But there's always a delicate balance as well between growth at all costs, almost like the WeWork model, and then profitable or really strong unit economics. And if you go too far one way or the other, then it can lead to very misbalanced business. But it's very easy to get lured into just grow. As long as the top line grows, everything else can go by the wayside. But then there some companies have been really burned by that. How do you view that?
There's so much competition on deals that investors try to more and more accept those ARR, MRR type of valuation, and less about, like, percentage EBITDA or percentage of profit. Basically, at one point you need to make money and you need a LT situation, you need an LT financial position. So it's our role to make sure we have a sustainable growth, that it's not going to burst, that you're not going to disappoint your investors, because I think every investor is okay with, as long as there's growth, they're okay with cash burn and everything. But at one point you need to deliver. And I think that's part of my role as a CFO, to make sure that we keep that balance. And right now, like Series A, so you can imagine we're still like startup, burning money. We're just starting to commercialize. So when are we going to be break even? It's difficult to predict in these days, but you at least need to show signs of it by managing your costs in a way that there's always more demand than supply, as every company, but you need to find this balance that, you know, at one point you convert into a profit or cash flow positive. The big, I think, issue or analysis we need to make is, does it have to be like in the next 12 months, or could it be 24 months? And so that's always a difficult, in terms of capital allocation, difficult decision. Or you want to get that break-even point early or later? And that's, you know, discussions we're having with boards and our financial stakeholders. But at the end, again, we put the pros and cons and find a balance. But in our case, it's been a growth story so far. So we want to still push, and we have tremendous help from our financial sponsor. But we're at a point where we need to establish as a credible company and make profit. So again, is it going to be like next month, next few months, and next 12 months? We don't know, but we'll need to get there. That's my point.
Yeah. And then you mentioned that you have to manage that cash burn very carefully. But the, of course, you're focused on growth at the beginning. So that concept of cost control, if introduced too early, could it be a constraint? Or if introduced too late, it could lead to chaos and an unsustainable business. So is that something that should wait? Or should companies, you know, at Series A, at your stage, introduce that visibility and focus on costs?
You need to first demonstrate your value proposition to the market. And even if it leads to losses, it's rare a company that's going to break. If you try to break even like day one and sell a unit and make margin on it, it's rare companies that could do that. So you need to accept this phase. And as a CFO, it's sometimes I think we too risk averse, and we're having a hard time understanding that period. And it's our role. We're pushing on management, on the CEO very often, try to find that balance. But I think from what I've seen, this period of growth is critical for like future success. And you should try to sell your future to your investor and try for them to understand your value proposition more than your positive cash flow. I think it works well. And when you reach a different maturity stage, now that you have a different set of investors, you have like, and that's where you start to talk a different language. It's more cash flow related. So I would encourage the CFO to try to understand the value proposition, understand how we could go to market and how we could generate value with the business, more than thinking cash flow and managing cash flow accordingly, and communicating that, okay, we might need another financing round at that stage and that stage. That's, to me, more important than making sure we're breaking even.
Brainbox AI has a fascinating value proposition, because you're tackling a very complex, hugely widespread problem that doesn't just impact companies that you're cutting customers, but actually has a huge impact on the climate and the future of the planet. So no pressure to get it fixed then. But there's clearly this huge opportunity. But we've now, so we're Soldo is based in the UK, and so there's been a lot of attention on COP26, as there is every time we have these conventions. And whilst there wasn't the progress that many wanted, it felt as if there was a much more increased focus and more momentum towards not only debating if this is a problem, but really demanding significant action on this. And so it feels as if Brainbox AI, like as a company, is in an incredible space to have a really meaningful impact on the world at the perfect time.
Yeah, I mean, talking about COP26, we just got like we just won the prize of the Tech for the Planet, the first prize at COP26. So the technology, future technology potential of the year, selected out of 10 potential other companies. So we're very, very proud of that and very excited. I think it shows the level of impact and importance we could have on the planet. And it's important and it's critical. I think we're out of time. We need to do dramatic change. And we're very happy that, you know, regulations are starting to change. I think UK, there's a significant regulation change. Australia, we see that it's happening right now. So I think we're well positioned. Our value proposition is towards buildings, so HVAC system, and that accounts for more than 20% of the GHG like emissions. So if we could reduce the energy consumption of this asset class, it could have a tremendous impact in the world. So what we're trying to achieve right now is think about a self-driving car with artificial intelligence. So that applies to automotive industry. Think about like BrainBox doing that for the building class. So taking data that is generated by the buildings and communicating back to the building and reducing energy consumption while keeping the comfort of the user of the building. So that's what we're trying to achieve. And next step for us is also to attack the energy grid. So think about like clusters of building in UK working together and having idle like capacity, supplying that to the energy grid and solving all kinds of energy problems on a greater level. That's our next innovation, and where we, if we could reach a certain scale, that's you know, for us, next phase of our evolution, working with the grid providers and supplying from the building total amount of energy, supplying a bit of that to the grid providers. So that's very, very critical. And that's where we are right now in COP26. We're very proud it demonstrated that.
That's a very cool achievement. So that recognition is awesome. And now really you've got the technology, but you've certainly got the basis for it. And I'm sure there's lots to build on, of course, as there ever, a never ending roadmap is a healthy thing. So then where again, does your focus lie as a company, like, and as you think about your investments for the coming year, because you've only got certain resources and you need to decide where to place your bet. And presumably it's all about distribution.
Yeah, exactly. So our technology has a place where it's working. It's obviously our algorithm, as more data we're going to onboard, the better our algorithm are going to be for each and every different asset class. That's ongoing. But where we are right now, it's commercialization and distribution and also onboarding of our clients. It's a new technology people don't understand. It's a type of a sector which is slow moving. You know, building owner, and you have a lot of legacy buildings, and sometimes the equipments are long lasting. It could last, like HVAC system could last, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years. So we need to educate our clients and we need to educate our distributors. So we just started to commercialize 2019, we're in second year. So we're putting a lot of effort building our sales team, our distribution channel, and, you know, training all those people to make sure we convert this big potential into revenue and cash flow.
And so then when you're thinking about how you build your finance team and that's trying to partner and guide that growth within the company, how are you approaching that?
I joined 8 weeks ago, BrainBox, and basically a big mandate that was given to me is automation. So we're still like an early stage company, but we're selling in 17 countries right now, and we have more than 100 million of like square footage of building that we touch right now. And the finance function, when you start a company, was not the first one to put in place. So it's the first CFO position in the company. So I approach the finance function as I need to build a base while strategically upgrading and business partnering with the operation. So an important part of that is putting process in place. An important part of that is an ERP system that we are thinking and talking about right now. But it's also to educate, like just raise my finance team and having the proper people on board and make sure we are adequately supporting our partners, which they're learning as well. Like we're having our first sales. So just the, like, for example, the PO to cash process, it's bumpy right now. So to improve all kinds of those process and make sure I support the team. So I'm approaching that with a lot of fun and stimulate. It's going to be very stimulating. I was in a software company before, but I was more an established company growing through M&A. But now it's about internal growth. It's about make sure we grow organically. We establish the base. And so this, what I call the Maslow pyramid of finance, starting from base finance operation to strategic support, we need to get through that full pyramid right now. So that's how I'm approaching that. And it's all start with people. You have to bring the proper people on the bus. You work as a team and you just support your business partner, which are the operation. In our case, your internal clients. Then you show that you could bring value to an organization and the wheels is starting well.
One of the things and the themes that's come up is that, and you mentioned automation. So at the heart of what Brainbox is offering your customers is automation and a level of intelligence that didn't exist before. And then you're trying to embed that within the way that Brainbox works as well. But of course, depending on where you automate and what you automate, you might need fundamentally different people or different skills in your team to be able to build that in. And is that something that you're considering as you build your team because you're trying to look at the technology or tools in hand with the people?
Yeah, definitely. We'd like to try to, let's say, repetitive task, try to get rid of that and so that our people are focused on value created stuff. I'm onboarding people that have worked in transforming companies, that have worked with IS people, have assembled like ERP system. I have worked on putting in place IS system. So definitely in this entrepreneurial spirit is key when I'm looking for people right now. And yes, the link between finance and IS right now, in my case, in automation is very important. I think as a company, we underestimate the level of value that the IS people brings. Because as you know, an accountant, I know how to align the projects, but you need people doing it with the business in mind. And those IS people, I've started to realize that probably like 7-8 years ago when I was at Cassette, where there was a lot of internal developers for reporting, for system like consolidation. And I realized like the value over the long run for a company is huge. And sometimes we don't think about it because we're using expert consultants and they help us. But to have those resources in-house is huge. And I'm trying to look for those that have both finance IS or that could have interacted with other departments. That's very important in times of my recruiting criteria right now.
And so really you're looking for people who have got the technical skills from a financial perspective, but also an, at least an awareness, if not direct experience with software and tools.
Exact. And if it's not with software and tools, it's with process improvement. So for example, like treasury, when you do treasury internationally, like there's a lot of automation you could have just with optimizing your bank system and understanding how you could use your accounting system and your bank system and uploads and formation. So people that have done it, that understands like what's to build an international company is important, again, in my recurring criteria.
And you mentioned that ERP is the natural place for you to start, like get something in that allows you to scale. Beyond that, are there other areas, other particular processes or areas within finance that you're looking to automate?
We're looking, I mentioned before, the PO to cash. For me, I'm looking to automate, but also educate and fine-tune that process. And it starts with our legal agreements and the way we interact with our clients. In there, you can understand that when you're a startup at first, you need to accept conditions so that your clients wants to work with you and they give you the opportunity to be like your kind of guinea pigs, and you want to make sure that they try your product. So that's a phase of evolution. I think we're at next phase where, you know, contractually, we need to improve that so that our PO to cash process is shorter. So we start there. Then all the onboarding of a client from a finance perspective, how do we project manage, when do we invoice, there's some trigger points in our agreement, but those trigger points could be subjective sometimes. So how do we make sure that our people that very often are technical savvy, but maybe less financial savvy, and they want to please client and like maybe sometimes, you know, it's disadvantageous in terms of financial perspective from the company. So how do you find this balance so that everyone's happy? So training our own people and make sure that project manager thinks about also getting some money in the bank. And then it's all like the invoicing component, automate invoicing, make sure we have a like collection type of approach. So we're currently working on all of those elements right now to try to shrink our PO to cash. So that's another area we've worked on. AP. So we've used a best of breed system on the accounts payable side, which I think we're doing a good job right now. I've talked about like treasury, but just leveraging the bank platform to a better, like more efficient way, we gain a lot of, you know, efficiency there on an AP standpoint. So yeah, I mean, expense accounts, try to get into like all digital electronic type of format, signatures and approvals and stuff like that. So those are quick wins that are not system related, but process related that gives you a big win at the end.
Sounds like a mountain of work.
Yes, but that's a good example of, you know, you want to create strategic value, but you need to establish your base, and we should not lose that, like, is the key. And again, I've worked with more established company, and it's all rolling, and it's all like, you realize that there's been like a lot of people before you that have built those, and you don't realize how much work it was when it's a mature system and mature tools, and you press a button and you get your report and your dashboard. Now, like, we're establishing dashboard, we need about to think about KPIs and accountability of our people, and it's all like in process, but at the same time it's iterative, and you know it's not going to be perfect day one, but you have something and you make sure the wheel is turning. So that's how we approach it. I feel very pleased because the mindset of management is we're building the plane as we're flying it. And basically, so that's okay. Like, we know we're not perfect in even finance areas, but we want to improve, and we need to demonstrate that we're improving and we're getting better. That's our goal right now. Later, it's going to be different, but today, that's our focus. So,
and I think that's one of the exciting things about an early stage scale up is that, and it's a phrase that we use at Soldo, which is taking joy in the making of it. Whereas in the past, you're often somewhere where it already exists and you're tweaking or redesigning or optimizing. But when you're building something from scratch, it's both incredibly challenging, but it's actually incredibly rewarding because you get the opportunity to think from first principles or fix all the mistakes that you made in the past in other places.
Yeah, you're right. And that's what attracted me in that job. Like, I love my previous company, and it was like all good. I could have stayed there a very long time, but it was more mature, it was established. And the Brainbox AI opportunity was for me first time to jump into like a more startup mindset, international growth. So that was very attractive. So you're right. And like feeling rewarded, sometimes you lose like the side, say, oof, okay, like this should work better. But yeah, at the end of the week, you say, okay, we've accomplished and we've built something this week, and it feels good. It feels good. And you add that to the, you know, the mission and the purpose of the company from a greater good standpoint. It's very appealing, and it's fun. And I want to make sure my people, my team, they feel part of this and that mission, and they find a way to contribute, and not that they feel like a, you know, a shared service function that, you know, cannot bring value to the greater good, which we all do in a sense. So that's also very important for me in terms of engaging the new people that are joining us right now.
And with that in mind, actually, so you mentioned that you've been now CFO at a larger company and now a small but rapidly scaling scale-up company. So what advice would you give to or offer to others aspiring CFOs to help them prepare so they could be successful in the role?
I would say go there with an open-minded and not too much of a finance mind, in a sense that be prepared to be a business partner and think about the corporation. So be a business partner. That would be my recommendation. Think about this mindset of customer focus and your customer being your other department, because you know you need to partner with CEO. And yes, finance is such a critical, and you have like a financial stewardship role that is very, very important. But more than that, we're not an accounting firm where we're selling accounting department. We're selling, in our case, artificial intelligence, and we're selling energy reduction. That's what we need as a company to demonstrate. So in finance, align the company interest with the finance interest and be open to that. And your goal should be to propel those divisions and those internal clients and bring them value so that they go at you and they use you, they utilize you, and they see that it's fun to work with finance and it's great because they help me in my day to day. So that would be my advice. And then be open, because you know it's so intellectually very stimulating. You have a lot of decisions to take on a daily basis, from finance operation to strategic one. So try to use all your areas of like expertise and make sure that you're not trying to protect or prevent a company from growing, for example, or stop projects. Try to understand. Sometimes you have to stop projects, but try to understand why people are doing it and try to be in solution mode instead of like, I think early in my career, like the accounting departments were very, and I heard that from many people working with me, like they were going to finance and they were scared and say, oh shit, my finance, my project will be blocked and everything. It's okay to block it, but try to help them pitching you so that you could acceptance in a way so that it's going to bring value to the company, is going to create value for our shoulders. And we have a role to play there, because I realized growing that there's different kinds of expertise that, you know, and we have, like we're trained to see all that. We have a good horizontal view and a good business sense, and we could interact with different, with creative people, with engineers, with marketing, with sales. We could talk the talk with them, which some departments is sometimes more difficult to do. So, but we see it all. So that would be my advice for a CFO, like transitioning, let's say from early CFO transitioning from a specialist role to a CFO role. Try to make sure you're open-minded.
Great advice, Francis. Francis, we're drawing to a close now. So I would finish off with one last question, which is a very difficult one, of course. Predictions for next year. The last 2 years have been probably the most challenging years ever to try and forecast and predict. Looking at the way, you know, the world is at the moment and going into next year, are there any particular trends or predictions that you are betting on at Brainbox AI?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question. We feel very optimistic. And, you know, for us, like what's happening in the world right now, we started our company, like the company is born during COVID era. So the risk of the variant, what we see right now today, like we've gone in through that. So we're not more affected than we were. And we just like won a very good prize at COP26. We're growing like crazy. I think the prediction, maybe if there is, you know, we expect high growth. We have a good value proposition, but I think the growth maybe will not be as fast as we think internationally, whether we want it or not. Like travel helps, like business relationship build helps in terms of making sure, especially as a young company, people understand your product. So if there's a prediction, maybe, like there's probably going to be a travel restriction right now coming up. We're not over with all this, and that we should be conservative in terms of our growth forecast. That would be my feel. This being said, in our case, it's still going to be tremendous growth and tremendous like challenge to manage a global deployment in this this weird period of time that we are. So the way we manage that right now is like cash forecast is more frequent, but also make sure our communications with all our parties, like our stakeholder, whether it's our employees, our business partner, our clients, are as good as possible. So, but in terms of financial success or financial impact, we still like we're very optimistic, and we're looking forward for next year actually.
And I can imagine it's an incredible space to be in. I think Brainbox AI is trying to solve a problem that could have a huge impact across the world. So yeah, thank you very much for joining us, Francis. It's been brilliant to listen to you. If anyone wanted to follow you or connect with you, any of our listeners wanted to follow you or connect with you online, is there a particular place that they should do that?
I think my LinkedIn page should be the go-to, first go-to, and then we could connect together with different methods.
Francis, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ross. Greatly appreciated. Good to meet you.
If you have a question you'd love to ask a guest, visit cfoplaybook.fm and submit your question there. This show is brought to you by Soldo, the brighter way to manage business spending and expenses. With Soldo, you can control every expense, track spend in real time, automate financial reporting, and then use those insights to fuel growth. Learn more at soldo.com.